What would you do if a demon offered you revenge against those who wronged you? For Juniper Kynes, the answer is clear. She'll give anything, including her soul. Her soul for revenge has captivated readers with its dark blend of horror, eroticism, and supernatural revenge, becoming a TikTok sensation with over 10 million views under the hashtag SpicyBookTok hashtag. Author Harley LaRue masterfully crafts a world where demons walk among us, ancient gods lurk beneath the surface, and sometimes the most monstrous beings aren't the supernatural ones. 3 years ago, Juniper Kynes barely escaped with her life when the Liberi cult and Abalum tried to sacrifice her to their ancient god, the Deep One. After being thrown into an abandoned mineshaft, the infamous Blackheart Mine where seven miners had vanished in 1932, she managed to claw her way out through narrow tunnels, her fingernails torn and bleeding. When she finally emerged into daylight, covered in dirt and her own blood, she tried desperately to expose the truth. But no one believed her stories of monsters and cults. Not the local police, who dismissed her as hysterical, not her childhood friends, who avoided her like a plague, and certainly not the staff at Riverside Psychiatric Facility, where she was committed after attempting to kill Victoria Hadley, her former best friend who had betrayed her to the cult under the guise of a midnight birthday celebration. Now released and constantly on the run, Juniper has learned to survive in a world where eld beasts, horrifying creatures that serve the Deep One, hunt her relentlessly. These entities appear as shadows at first, materializing from dark corners and abandoned spaces. Their forms a twisted mockery of human anatomy. She's become a hardened fighter, carrying blessed silver bullets and iron-forged knives, drinking bottom-shelf whiskey to numb her recurring nightmares, and engaging in rough, anonymous encounters in seedy motels to momentarily forget her trauma. Her life is one of perpetual vigilance and isolation, always moving between small towns and cheap apartments, never forming connections that might endanger others or herself. Even the stray cat she once fed for 3 days had to be abandoned when she spotted cultist symbols carved into her apartment door. When news reaches her through an encrypted email from her only remaining ally, a disgraced journalist named Carter Walsh, that her brother Marcus has been murdered on the Abalum University campus, Juniper knows immediately who's responsible. The Hadley family, Kent, Meredith, and their children Victoria and Jeremiah, leaders of the Liberi cult, have claimed another victim in her family. Marcus's body was found in the university's antiquities library, surrounded by ancient texts and symbols identical to those she'd seen in the mineshaft. With nothing left to lose, Juniper returns to Abalum, armed with 3 years' worth of research into occult practices and a duffel bag full of weapons. She's determined to destroy the cult that stole everything from her, even if it means burning the whole town to the ground. What she doesn't realize is that she's being watched by someone who's been following her for years, a demon named Zane, marked by silver eyes and ritual scars, who has his own interest in her survival and a centuries-old vendetta against the Deep One. Zane isn't just any demon. He's a soul hunter who's been tracking Juniper for years, fascinated by her fierce will to survive against impossible odds. When they finally meet face to face, there's an immediate, dangerous attraction between them. Despite her wariness, Juniper can't deny the pull she feels toward this supernatural predator who seems to understand her pain and rage better than any human ever could. After discovering that another demon named Leon has stolen her brother's corpse under orders from Kent Hadley, Juniper makes her decision. She approaches Zane with an offer. Her soul in exchange for his help destroying the Liberi cult. But Zane wants more than just her soul. He demands her body, her pleasure, her pain, and her submission. Though initially resistant to the idea of submitting to anyone, Juniper agrees to the terms, knowing that with a demon at her command, she'll finally have the power to exact the revenge she's dreamed of for years. Their bargain is sealed in blood and pleasure in the rain-soaked forest, with Zane carving his name into her flesh with a blade of supernatural ether. This binding ritual creates a connection between them that goes beyond the transactional, something neither of them anticipated. As Juniper's soul becomes tied to Zane's, they begin to feel each other's emotions and develop a bond that complicates their arrangement in ways neither expected. "I've been hunting souls for over 5 centuries," Zane reflects. "When Juniper demands the complete destruction of the Labyrie, I'm taken aback by the scope. She wants to personally kill Kent, Jeremiah, Victoria, and Meredith Hadley, along with their followers, essentially eradicating half of Abellum."
With their pact sealed, Juniper and Zane begin plotting the destruction of the Liberi cult. Their first mission is to recover Marcus's body, which has been taken to White Pine Mine, the very place where Juniper was once imprisoned. Returning to the site of her trauma tests Juniper's resolve, but with Zane at her side, she finds the strength to face her fears. Inside the mine, they discover Marcus's corpse impaled on stalagmites, surrounded by pale, mushroom-covered creatures called golems that serve the Deep One. When these creatures attack, recognizing Juniper as someone the Deep One calls, Zane fights ferociously to protect her, revealing the depths of his power and his growing attachment to her. This encounter confirms what Juniper has always known: the supernatural horror she witnessed were real, not delusions. After retrieving Marcus's body and giving him a proper burial at her father's old hunting cabin, Juniper and Zane begin surveillance on the Hadley family. They discover that the cult's plans are accelerating. Jeremiah has murdered Marcus as part of a ritual requiring 3 souls given, with 2 more sacrifices planned. They also learn that Heidi Laverne, Kent's mistress and a powerful witch, was the one who helped Juniper escape years ago, and that her daughter Everly has gone missing after seemingly turning against the cult. As they work together, the line between business arrangement and genuine connection begins to blur. Zane finds himself caring for Juniper in ways he never expected, tending her wounds when she's attacked by Eldbeasts and offering her a safe haven in his home. For her part, Juniper begins to trust Zane despite her instinct to keep everyone at arm's length, finding in him someone who believes her story without question and accepts her darkness without judgment. Their investigation leads them to Everly Laverne, who initially attacks them but eventually reveals herself as an ally. Unlike the cold-hearted witch Juniper expected, Everly is tormented by her complicity in Juniper's torture years ago. She explains that her mother Heidi realized her mistakes too late and tried to help Juniper escape that night, and that Everly herself now wants to destroy the Deep One before it can fully manifest on Earth. Everly warns that if the Liberi completes their 3 sacrifices, the god will be freed, ending humanity as they know it. She proposes they work together. Juniper and Zane will kill the Hadleys, while Everly and her demon companion, Callum, an archdemon far more powerful than Zane, will focus on destroying the god itself. Their first target is Kent Hadley, whom they ambush during a Halloween party at his home. After removing a protective amulet that shields him from supernatural harm, Juniper takes him to an isolated garden shed where she exacts her revenge, forcing him to witness her pleasure and joy before slitting his throat. This act of vengeance, rather than leaving her empty, fills her with a sense of justice and power she's never known. To celebrate their victory, Zane takes Juniper to a secret demon nightclub called a Clan, a place where supernatural beings can indulge their darkest desires without human constraints. Here, Juniper embraces her connection to Zane more fully, allowing him to pierce her tongue with a black onyx barbell in a public ritual that marks her as his. This experience helps her reclaim her sexuality on her own terms, transforming what was once a source of pain into a source of power and pleasure.
Their victory is short-lived. When Jupiter witnesses Victoria being dragged by Jeremiah to St. Thaddeus Cathedral, a looming Gothic structure with centuries of dark history, she follows through rain-slicked streets. Hidden behind a weathered stone pillar, she watches in horror as her former friend is sacrificed upon an obsidian altar. The ritual succeeds in partially manifesting the Deep One, an ancient entity of unfathomable horror. The god possesses Jeremiah's body, transforming him into something inhuman. His flesh rippling with otherworldly power, his eyes becoming bottomless pools of darkness, and his voice carrying echoes of countless screaming souls. As the situation grows more desperate, Zane and Jupiter target Meredith Hadley, the matriarch who orchestrated both their sufferings. In the opulent study of her mansion, Zane performs his demonic feeding ritual, drawing out her corrupted soul to replenish his depleted strength. Jupiter follows through with her part, methodically slitting Meredith's throat with the same ceremonial dagger used in the original ritual. The poetic justice of their revenge, however, comes with a terrible price. Their actions create a beacon that draws a reaper, one of the ancient entities that maintain the boundary between life and death. The battle with the reaper unfolds in a masterpiece of supernatural combat. The entity manifests as a towering figure of shadow and bone, its scythe cutting through reality itself. Jupiter and Zane demonstrate their growing partnership through perfectly coordinated attacks. Jupiter cleverly repurposes Kent's protective amulet, breaking it into shards and loading them into her shotgun shells, each fragment glowing with centuries-old protective magic. Zane provides crucial distractions, using his demonic abilities to confound the creature while Jupiter lines up her shots. Though they succeed in driving the Reaper away, both emerge wounded and shaken, knowing they've only delayed the inevitable confrontation with something far worse. The final showdown at the Hadley House brings everything full circle. The mansion's grand foyer becomes a battlefield as Jupiter confronts not only the god-possessed Jeremiah, but also the surviving cult members who once thought her an easy sacrifice. Jeremiah's transformation is complete and horrifying, his human form splitting open to reveal writhing tentacles, his skin weeping black ichor that corrodes everything it touches, and the air itself becoming thick with the stench of ancient seas. Standing amid the chaos, Jupiter embodies the transformation from victim to avenger. Her declaration rings through the house. You thought you threw a lamb down into the dark? You didn't. You threw down a wolf, and I came back biting. The final shot from her enchanted weapon strikes true, banishing both Jeremiah and the nearly manifested god back to the void, leaving behind only the echoes of eldritch horrors and the heavy silence of hard-won victory. In the aftermath of their victory, Juniper experiences a profound sense of release, like a decade-old knot finally unraveling in her chest. The suffocating weight of fear and hatred that has defined her existence for years lifts gradually, though the deep scars of her trauma remain etched into her psyche. She and Zane leave the blood-soaked memories of Abalam behind, choosing the quiet solitude of Vermont's rolling hills and dense forests, a place where ancient trees stand guard and the wilderness offers its own kind of healing. In their new home, Juniper begins the arduous journey of recovery with Dr. Sarah Chen, a therapist who specializes in trauma and, remarkably, has previous experience counseling survivors of supernatural violence. Their sessions take place in a sun-filled office, where Juniper gradually learns to lower her defenses, one painful memory at a time. Dr. Chen helps her understand that healing isn't linear. Some days feel like victories, others like steps backward into darkness. The epilogue finds them 6 months later, with subtle but significant changes marking Juniper's progress. The gun she once kept under her pillow now rests in a locked safe. She still startles at unexpected noises, but no longer reaches for a weapon at every sound. During therapy sessions, she allows herself to cry openly now, something she once considered an unforgivable weakness. These tears, Dr. Chen assures her, are not signs of breaking, but of mending. Zane remains an unwavering presence through it all, his immortal patience matching the depth of his devotion. He learns to recognize the signs of her panic attacks, knowing when to hold her close and when to give her space.
Their relationship evolves beyond their initial bargain into something deeper and more nuanced, built on mutual understanding of each other's darkness rather than fear or obligation. In quiet moments, he watches her tend to their small garden, seeing how she's slowly putting down roots, both literal and metaphorical. "My little wolf with sharp teeth and stormy eyes," Zane reflects during one such moment, "all shattered pieces and jagged edges that shone brighter than the sun. A soul as dark and strange as my own. She was mine, and I was hers, for the rest of eternity." In these words lies the truth of their bond. Not a fairy tale romance of perfect healing, but a love story written in scar tissue and survival, in the quiet triumph of choosing to live and love despite the shadows of the past. At its core, Her Soul for Revenge explores the transformative power of both vengeance and connection. Juniper begins her journey seeking only destruction of the cult, of those who harmed her, and perhaps ultimately of herself. She views her soul as a reasonable price to pay for justice, having long ago given up on the possibility of healing or happiness. Her single-minded pursuit of vengeance has hollowed her out, leaving her as a shell of her former self, existing purely to execute her carefully planned revenge. The weight of her trauma manifests in small, telling details: her inability to sleep without weapons nearby, her flinching at unexpected touches, her ritualistic checking of exits in every room she enters. These behaviors paint a portrait of someone who has survived horror but hasn't yet learned to live beyond it. The cult's actions have left invisible scars that run deeper than any physical wounds, shaping every aspect of her daily existence. What she doesn't anticipate is finding acceptance and understanding in the most unlikely place, with a demon who values her not despite her darkness, but because of it. Zane sees Juniper's broken pieces not as flaws to be fixed, but as evidence of her strength and resilience. "Have you ever seen shattered glass catch the light?" he asks her. "How it shines as bright as the sun?" This metaphor becomes a recurring theme throughout their relationship, as Juniper slowly begins to see her fractured self through his eyes. Through their relationship, both Juniper and Zane discover aspects of themselves they never expected. Zane, who has spent centuries viewing humans merely as sources of souls to collect, finds himself caring deeply for Juniper's well-being and happiness. He breaks his own rules to protect her, risking the wrath of Hell's Council and fighting beings far more powerful than himself to keep her safe. His transformation from a cold, calculating soul collector to someone capable of profound love and sacrifice mirrors Juniper's own journey from vengeful survivor to someone who dares to hope again. Their connection challenges traditional notions of redemption and healing. Rather than suggesting that love magically cures all wounds, the story shows how genuine understanding and acceptance can create space for growth while acknowledging that some scars remain permanent. Zane's demonic nature actually makes him better equipped to understand Juniper's darkness. He neither fears it nor tries to fix it, instead helping her channel it into something powerful rather than purely destructive. LaRue subverts traditional notions of monstrosity throughout the novel, crafting a narrative that deliberately blurs the lines between savior and demon. The true monsters aren't the demons with their fangs and claws, but humans like the Hadleys who sacrifice others to gain power and favor. Their carefully cultivated public personas, charitable donations, church attendance, community leadership, mask a ruthless willingness to destroy lives for their own gain. The contrast becomes particularly stark when examining how the Hadleys manipulate vulnerable community members, using their reputation as upstanding citizens to identify and isolate potential victims. Zane, despite his supernatural nature and predatory instincts, demonstrates a complex moral framework that challenges readers' expectations. His demonic nature manifests in violent, protective impulses and territorial behavior, yet he shows more genuine humanity than the cult members who present themselves as pillars of the community. Where the Hadleys calculate and scheme, Zane operates on a straightforward code of loyalty and protection.
His interactions with Juniper reveal an incompetency for gentleness and understanding that the supposedly human antagonists notably lack. Similarly, Juniper's journey challenges conventional ideas about victimhood and survival. Though traumatized and broken in many ways, she never becomes a passive recipient of either harm or help. She fights viciously for her survival, stealing when necessary, lying to protect herself, and using whatever advantages come her way. Her relationship with Zane evolves from fear to cautious alliance to genuine connection, but she makes these transitions consciously and on her own terms. Rather than surrendering her agency, she reclaims it through choices that others might view as dangerous or morally questionable. The novel suggests that sometimes the most monstrous-seeming beings can offer the greatest salvation, while those who appear normal and respectable can harbor the darkest intentions. This theme manifests not only in the central relationship between Juniper and Zane, but in smaller moments throughout the narrative. The demon who guards children in the park, the respected teacher who turns a blind eye to abuse, the monster under the bed who becomes a confidant. These inversions force readers to question their assumptions about horality and humanity, suggesting that true monstrosity lies not in supernatural attributes, but in the choices we make and the ways we treat others. Her Soul for Revenge offers a unique perspective on healing from trauma. Rather than suggesting that recovery means returning to who you were before, it embraces the idea that trauma fundamentally changes you and that those changes aren't necessarily all negative. Juniper will never be the person she was before the Labiri tried to sacrifice her, but through her experiences, she's become stronger, more determined, and ultimately capable of both great violence and great love. The scars she carries, both physical and emotional, become sources of power rather than merely marks of pain. The novel doesn't shy away from the darker aspects of healing either. Juniper's path to recovery involves bloodshed and vengeance alongside therapy and connection. Her weekly sessions with a supernatural aware therapist provide structure, while her missions of revenge offer catharsis. The duality of her healing process reflects a deeper truth about trauma recovery, that it rarely follows a linear or conventional path. Her relationship with Zane, while loving, remains edged with danger and power dynamics that would be unhealthy in a purely human context. Yet within the supernatural framework of the story, their connection works precisely because they both embrace their darkness rather than trying to suppress it. Their shared understanding of violence and power creates a unique balance where traditional relationship rules don't apply. The author skillfully weaves metaphors throughout the narrative that mirror real-world healing processes. The magic system itself, where power comes at a cost but can be transformed, serves as an extended metaphor for how trauma survivors often rebuild themselves. Juniper's growing mastery over blood magic parallels her increasing control over her own life and choices. The Labiri's attempt to use her as a sacrifice becomes the very thing that empowers her to fight back against their entire organization. In the end, Her Soul for Revenge is a dark fairy tale about finding light in unexpected places. Juniper sells her soul for revenge, but gains something she never thought possible. A home, not in a place, but in a person who sees and accepts all of her, broken pieces and all. The novel suggests that true healing isn't about erasing the darkness, but learning to wield it alongside the light. Through Juniper's journey, readers see how trauma can forge someone into something new and powerful, how vengeance can transform into justice, and how acceptance, both of oneself and from others, can bridge the gap between who we were and who we've become. It's a reminder that even in our darkest moments, connection and understanding can offer a path forward, and that sometimes the most profound healing comes not from becoming who we once were, but from embracing who we've become.